Let's call the order of the House Committee on Advancing the Government. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 755. Mark, you want to, this is what we're looking at. Pam, you want to come up?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 755, we're looking at the Dash 7 amendments, which creates an emergency clause effective upon passage. Mr. Chair.
Representative Patridge.
I move the Dash 87 amendments to Senate Bill 755. These are the ones that the credit union testified on previously.
I add the emergency clause.
May support, Mr. Chairman, the Oregon Bankers Association. This is Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. Is it on? I'm mumbling today.
Put out my hearing aid.
Representative Patridge moves Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 755. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 755 and gross version as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves Senate Bill 755 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered. Do we want to go to consent calendar?
Sure.
Representative Patridge moves Senate Bill 755 to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered. Let's open work session on Senate Bill 400. Mark, you want to let us know what we're looking at?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 400 A modifies the interagency shared information system. We don't have any amendments to this bill that I'm aware of. Mr. Chair.
Is that a passage?
Mr. Chair, if it's a discussion, I'll move Senate Bill 400A.
Representative Patridge moves Senate Bill 400A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Patridge, any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered. Consent calendar?
Yes.
Representative Lowe moves Senate Bill 400 to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 401.
Representative Lowe?
Yeah.
Mark, I'm
explaining. Oh, Mark. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Certainly,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 401 modifies provisions regarding the occupational program planning system. Again, no amendments, additional amendments at this point. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, this is what Employment Department, I believe, testified on. I'd move Senate Bill 401 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge, you move Senate Bill 401 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Are you trying to break a hand,
please? We're just being efficient. If anybody would like to talk, we're more than happy to talk.
Fine. It's a good one.
Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 401 to the consent calendar.
Representative Patridge, you move Senate Bill 401 to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered. Let's go to Senate Bill 846. That's my work session. Senate Bill 846.
You're moving faster than I can dig through my pile.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 846A changes the renewal date of to join the Attorney General's no call list. That is the section that we removed by the Dash 4 amendments, as it is located in another bill, I believe, on the Senate side. Mr. Chair.
Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 846. I believe that the Department of Justice testified to these, and
Cheryl, everybody has agreed.
Yeah, Cheryl Pellegrini asked that Section 1 should be amended, and that's what this does, doesn't it?
Right. We have a gentleman from
Paul,
DOJ.
Paul Costco's okay with this.
Yes, everybody's okay.
Works for me.
Representative Patridge moves the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 846. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing seen, none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 846A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge, moves Senate Bill 846 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered.
Consent calendar.
Representative Lowe moves Senate Bill 846 to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Let's open the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 17. Mark, can you explain what we're looking at?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Resolution 17, proposed amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow for the holding and disposition of or disposing of stock by the state. We're looking at the dash one amendments, which should be in the front of your binders, which move the public vote for approval or disapproval on this amendment to the primary election, as discussed in last committee. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard testimony on SCR 17 previously. I move the dash one amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 17.
Representative Patridge moves the dash one amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 17. Discussion? This is moving it to the primary election, which they wanted in conjunction with a general obligation bond bill, which is moving, which they anticipate to be on the same ballot, so that they could have a combined campaign. Any further discussion related to Senate Joint Resolution 17?
I just, as a point of procedure, I'm not tickled about amending the Constitution for such things as this, and I do understand tactically why we are doing it, but I don't think we should monkey with the Constitution every time it's just a matter of convenience.
Representative Lowe, I would argue this is not a matter of convenience. It's because the prohibition is in that
in the Constitution.
They can't hold, and so they tried to narrowly draw what the provisions would be for what securities, which will create a positive environment and where the proceeds and the value of the research and work could roll back to the universities in terms of from a technology transfer perspective. So, Representative Patrick.
Just for the record, I would agree with Representative Lowe to some degree. I think that it needs to be, I mean, it's unfortunate that our constitutional provisions are so narrowly tailored that the legislature doesn't have the ability to do this. I also had some consternation at the hearing just in regard to the fact that this was so narrowly tailored, but the higher education community and others have convinced me that they wanted this narrowly tailored. I think it is unfortunate, however. So I'll give him this, but I'm voting no on 273.
Whoa.
Is there any further discussion on Senate Joint Resolution 17?
On the dash ones.
On the adoption of the dash one amendments. Hearing and seeing none, is there any objection to the adoption of the dash ones? Without hearing any, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 17 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves Senate Joint Resolution 17 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Without objection, so ordered.
I will carry this bill
to the floor.
I don't think we'll put a constitutional amendment on this.
No, I don't think
Thank
that's good
so
a precedent.
Much. Mind if I stand up and say this is a dumb way to go about business? State.
You have that ability.
Yes. I'll still vote for it, but.
Okay. Are we of a mind to take on more issues here? Let's open. We'll just deal with this. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 273.
I understand that nothing's going to happen at the other end of the table. Is that
let's give Mark to introduce this thing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 273 We're looking at the dash one amendments, which replace the original bill. As discussed in the last committee, we're looking for ways to clarify the purpose of the council and to maybe make some changes to the membership. So this elaborates and clarifies the purpose of the council, changes some requirements and positions of the council membership, including adding one state representative as well as a senator. Requires the council to convene quarterly instead of yearly. Requires the council to report the status of mission and make recommendations to the governor and legislature before December 31st, 2002, but it also gives them the opportunity to report back periodically. Adds a sunset of June 30th, 2005. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Who wants to come up and try to argue for this? Doris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doris Penwell from the Economic and Community Development Department. Let me just explain the amendments very quickly one more time. At the hearing, the last hearing, there was a lot of consternation about the lack of specificity in the bill itself to establish this council. And we took that discussion to heart, and after the hearing, we put together some amendments that essentially replaced the bill to, in sections 1, 5, and 6, delineate the purpose of the council, what kind of recommendations they would like to deliberate over and make recommendations to the governor and the legislature, and more clearly delineate the fact that the membership is made up of business representatives, whether they are on the various boards and boards that are in higher education as well as economic and community development. We added the state treasurer. He is interested in being a member of this, and it probably is, we decided it was probably wise to add him to the council because of the discussion of investments in technology in Oregon, and all the advice we can get is very helpful in this regard. At that point, I can answer any questions you would like.
I just have a comment. I mean, there's 17 members on 273, and then Employment Department's going to help out with Senate Bill 765, which is up later on. And that's another 12 people. So we have 29 new people doing technology and other things in the state. I object to this. I think we have way too much going on. I think OEDD needs to be more focused in their mission. And if we need to create all these councils because we're not happy with what OEDD is able to do, then you know, maybe we need to do something else. But I just think this is a poor way to go about doing it.
Further discussion? Any other questions?
Would the panel like to address the comments that were just made?
Mr. Chair, Doris Penwell. Yes, I would like to, at least from the standpoint of whether we, the department and the Board of Higher Ed and other educational institutions, can do this kind of work anyway. Of course they can. The one thing that we're very interested in is being sure that the legislature buys into the work that we're doing and the direction that we would propose to go. And so, therefore, we felt it was more important to have the legislature establish some kind of a council. We did agree to sunset the council or make recommendations to that effect, you know, as we move along. I talked to the governor's office about the possibility of establishing by executive order such an entity of some kind. They under normal circumstances would be willing to do that. They would be a little concerned that we didn't have the direction or the buy-in of the legislature to do that under executive order. That is not to say that the commission and the Board of Higher Ed and others couldn't proceed with a coordinating function anyway. But we just want to be sure that you think that our direction is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I did during the interim was to have an opportunity to talk to folks in Washington County involved in the business side of information technology. And one of the, almost to an individual, their big concern was the lack of strong direction from the educational sector in developing IT-prepared workforce. And it seems to me that something like this would really be of use in bringing those people to the same table to help develop partnerships and to help develop a plan for the state that's going to fix it so that Oregon students and Oregon citizens are able to get into that workforce and be better prepared. So to that extent, I'm supportive of this. I'd like to have some assurance from the panel that that's why this is being put together and where we're going with this, and that there's a plan that exists to get us there, and that there are some performance parameters for that plan.
Mr. Chair, Doris Penwell and committee members, there isn't a designated plan yet. We are in the middle of developing some of the parameters around which such a plan would be developed, but in fact, we need the conversations among the business community and the higher ed community, K through 12 even. So, in fact, that is one of the main reasons that we felt we needed some kind of a coordinative entity that does this. These will be advisory to the governor, the legislature, and to the Board of Higher Ed and to the Economic and Community Development Commission, so that they are not off on their own doing something separate from the bodies that are already organized in government. So from that standpoint, the department believes that this is a direction we could go. We definitely could argue over the words in any legislation, but I think it's an attempt to be sure that we have the conversation among ourselves and we have focus on that conversation. And a representative from higher ed might like to make comments as well, if you'd like.
My name is Jim Coonan. I'm a Portland businessman. I work part-time for the Oregon University System on policies related to how to better connect higher education with economic development policies of the state. I've been involved in this for the last 2 years, and I've done some research. I would have called this thing a science and technology council myself, but you know, we've been talking about this in Oregon back to the 80s. Oregon is one of the few states in the country that does not have such an advisory council. I think it's critical. These are issues, the transfer of knowledge from our universities into the private sector is not an issue that's going to go away. This is not a trendy issue. This is a fundamental issue. And I think it will add true value to the state. I don't see this as just another talking shop. Having participated in this, I think there was the impression given that this was a bunch of academics getting together. Really what it is are business people who are on the boards of those institutions of higher education, and I thought there was some real value, and what's come out of that are things like this constitutional amendment, which has had universal support from the private sector, and it is not just to benefit the universities, it's to help these emerging growth companies. They don't have the cash to acquire the research, but they do have their equity. I'm not here to pitch that, but I'm just saying those are the kinds of ideas in the earlier testimony I heard. What sort of things will come out of it? Part of it is the point you brought up. We're in a real jam in the high-tech sector in terms of number of skilled workers. Such a group like this could provide an early warning system. I think the amendments that have been suggested that we got from the earlier session have actually strengthened this, because I think it does put more accountability. It requires the group to report back to the legislature. I'm really pleased to get members of the legislature as part of this. And it's important for two reasons. One, I think we need the commitment of the legislature. We need to stand up as a state and say this is an important area. And I think the consistency, like I said, has gone back to the 80s. And the problem has been we've never had a consistent group. Certain administration comes in and they think it's an important issue. The next administration comes in and other issues tend to predominate. So our thinking was if we could put it in legislation, it's going to be an issue that's going to be kept on the front burner throughout administrations and not be a trendy issue. So as a business person, I'm strongly supportive of this.
Representative Petridge.
So if I'm a new business that wants to locate in Oregon, that needs access to broadband, and that does some research and development using the Oregon University system, how many organizations, technologically oriented organizations am I going to touch base with, including OEDD, this particular commission that's being proposed, the commission that's being proposed in Senate Bill 765, which is before this committee, which OEDD supports. Can you identify for me what other organizations we're going to touch base with?
Well, I'd say as an individual, Jim Kunin from Oregon University System, as an individual company, I doubt that you'd have any interaction with this particular organization. I mean, this organization is really meant to be policy-oriented, so you deal with the same people that you deal with, whether it's the Small Business Administration or whatever entities are out there. I mean, this group is really meant to be focused on policy issues and not to create more bureaucracy for companies to go through in order to try to get things done. I mean, what it's about is trying to identify and eliminate those barriers to transfer knowledge from our universities into the private sector.
And is this an ongoing problem, or is this, there are many other universities across the United States who do this already. Why is this an ongoing problem? Why can't we have a group that looks at it, that proposes some things, economic development can work with them, and higher ed can work with them?
Yeah, it's not really, I don't see it as a project kind of a problem. It's not something you just sort of fix and walk away from. Technology is evolutionary and dynamic. And if you look at other areas like Stanford University, MIT, they have organizations that support this issue on an ongoing basis. They don't look at it to say, look, we've solved it, and we can walk away from it. So at least from my viewpoint, I see it as something that requires ongoing attention.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just say that I think the transfer of technology and the business deal structure has not changed substantially, probably in the course of this country over a pretty stable long period of time. I think that there are models out there that are available. You know, that I'm just going to stop. Everyone knows what my opinion is on this. I just urge people to vote no. I think Employment Department has enough. Or I mean, OEDD has enough issues of their own right now that to add these two new commissions on top of their normal focus, I think, takes away from trying to do coordinated economic development in the state of Oregon.
I guess it's up to me, isn't it? Okay, here's how I feel about it, guys. I'm going to move the -1 amendments. Are we in work session yet?
Yes.
To Senate Bill 273. And let me give a little explanation of why I think that this might be a good idea. I recognize that probably it's not going to change the good representative from, where are you from?
Medford.
From Medford. is right. It's tough to transfer knowledge from academia into industry on any kind of an even basis, particularly since people are so protective of work product and that kind of thing. Sharing of information in technology is tough. I think that there's a whole environment of stealth and listening devices that some of the folks in that industry dream about using against one another just so that they can share information. And to the extent that this would bring down some of those barriers and provide energy and impetus to that industry in this state, it makes me feel like maybe we can move ahead exponentially. And it's worth an experiment of at least 2 years, and so I'm willing to go down this road, see if it does anything. If it doesn't do anything in that period of time, should any of us be privileged enough to return to this body, then we're going to hold you accountable. Fair enough?
That's certainly fair. I'd also say that the results of the original group, such as this constitutional amendment, frankly, just wouldn't have appeared. And you can have questions about whether it's too narrowly written or what, but the impact is going to be substantial on the state of Oregon.
Well, let's see good things, then.
Well, I would take exception to whatever occurred as it was discussed in many forums, not just in that forum, and it was discussed heavily on the Internet Commission in terms of his, and it came out as one of those recommendations. So maybe a recommendation, we adopt the -1s today, and we'll bring this back on Thursday in work session.
Okay.
We'll adopt the amendments.
adopt the dash ones, please.
Representative Lowe moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 273. Is there discussion? Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I'll vote for the dash ones because they're better than the original bill, at least.
No, without objection, so ordered, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 273.
Thank you.
Let's open up work session on Senate Bill 765. Mark, can you explain what we're doing?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 765 is the bill that creates an interim task force to be called the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. No amendments on this bill, Mr. Chair.
And it says it's subsequent to Ways and Means?
Yes, it does. Subsequent to Ways and Means.
We're in work session.
I know you're looking at me with huge expectations, but I have a little confession to make, Mr. Chairman. My aide suffers from something called BD reversal, and instead of Senate Bill 765, I have 756. And so if you're listening, Jim, would you please bring me the right file?
It's in your folder.
And if he does, I expect a standing ovation from him for actually, you know, listening in. Oh, yeah. This is the one where the governor gets to appoint everything, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to Ways and Means.
Okay.
I don't think Representative Patrick is going to move it.
I don't think he likes it either. He didn't like this one either. Mr. Chairman, are we in work session?
We are in work session.
All right. Let's move Senate Bill 765 to
Ways and Means. I'll move it with no recommendation, Mr.
With
Chair.
No recommendation. I don't care if there's a recommendation or not. It's not a bad idea, is it? I'm not sure. What's the problem with this? Can we have some discussion?
Certainly.
I'd be happy to have this. Mr. Chair?
Representative Patridge.
My problem with this is I don't think this thing really does anything. I don't think that it's all appointed by the governor. Everyone's appointed by the governor. And I think it's just another added layer of bureaucracy that's going on. I know that the counties would disagree with me, but... All these people can come to the table. All these people can make recommendations on how the money should be spent, and they should work through the existing structure to make sure that happens.
Does this thing cost anything?
It costs time from Oregon Economic and Community Development.
Mark?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there has been there's a minimal fiscal impact on this bill. And there's been no impact statement issued at this point, Mr. Chair.
Bill, fight for your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We feel this is a very important council, has a very important task for between now and the next session. Oregon is making some significant investments in telecommunications across the state, and those investments need to ensure that all areas of the state are served by telecommunications facilities, so that individuals in some areas of the state, as an individual I was talking with today from Oak Ridge, was telling me, don't send me that file over the internet, it'll take me a half hour to download it. We have not got a DSL into our community, and we're still waiting for that. So it's an important look at underserved and unserved areas.
Name on record, Bill.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. So we feel that it is vitally important for the state, county, cities, the public sector, private sector, to get together and look at where the investments are being made today, where the gaps are likely to be, and bring back to the next legislative session recommendations on how best we can address those in a public-private partnership across the state.
Bill, why didn't you just add more members to the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board rather than create some new entity that has no authority to do anything?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Committee have a responsibility through this next interim before that advisory body sunsets, and that is selecting those 622 projects with Quest and OECDD and seeing that those contracts are entered into and that those projects are carried out. So it's going to have a pretty full plate as it is through the rest of this biennium. We started this process, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, really 2 years ago, prior to the last session. We were trying to work in cooperation with the Department of Administrative Services and with Economic Development. As you may recall, we had a change in administration in the Department of Administrative Services, and they have been much more helpful to local governments since then, but we're concerned that if we don't have something that is specified here, directed by the legislature, that there is always the chance that, you know, counties will be out there, regional governments, but we may or may not have the support of the state government and state agencies. At this point, we do. Both DAS and OECDD have jointly testified before this committee that they're supportive of it. And just on one other point, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, with regard to the appointment of members, I would be certainly open to the committee's recommendations in that area. We debated that on several occasions on the Senate side and basically ended up with the governor making the appointments. We would certainly be open to a legislative involvement in that process, if that is something of importance.
Mr. Chairman,
Blow.
To me, having legislative involvement is something of huge importance. There are some major policy areas that are being considered by various committees in this building today, plans about which were developed during the interim at the direction of the governor, bringing industry together and so forth, without legislative participation, and I find that to be problematic, especially when it's the buck stops with the legislature and it's up to us to pass the policy. So I'm happy with this concept. I think, you know, maybe it's gender-based, but the more people who are participating willingly in helping move a state forward, that's an inclusionary process, and I like that. I favor that. But your process does not include legislators, and it that's worrisome to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, if I might point out to you, we tried to balance that. Yes, in the bill it has the governor appointing the members, but in the bill on page 2, lines 23 and 24, and then again in lines 37 through 43, we have the legislative body involved through the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and felt that this body would be reporting to that Joint Interim Committee on a regular basis, and in essence, if you see in Section 1, Subsection 13, recommendations for legislation would be brought forward, filed with the Joint Interim Committee, and those recommendations then would be forwarded by the Interim Committees. We tried to balance it a bit in trying to bring the legislative in and legislative body into that role.
The discussion, Representative Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, Bill, I just don't see why I don't see why you need this extra piece in here. I'm looking at ORS 759-430, which is the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board. While it's tasked to do some of these other things, I'd be happy to modify the legislation to ask it to do some other things. But to add a 12-member telecommunications coordinating council into the mix, I mean, the advisory board already reports to the Oregon Economic Development Commission. To add a 12 members, plus they can... Plus, this commission on its own can add other members to it. I just think it's a lot of extra work. I think it's a lot of extra time. If you don't feel that the counties are being properly represented on the advisory board, then tell us. That's what you're not doing. But let's not run around and create another committee commission.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I think we believe there are separate roles and responsibilities here between the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board and this council. This council would have a broader responsibility, would have the statewide picture to look at from local government up through the state. The advisory committee has the responsibility of managing the funds that have been raised in Senate Bill 622 from last session. Also, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I'm concerned about whether or not the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board could be expanded to assume this responsibility without potentially being in conflict with the directive that was given to it in 622 of last session. You recall it has very specific financing funds to find for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Since the money's all been spent, would you be amenable to taking this and expanding the mission of the Connecting Oregon Communities Commission and add a couple more members to it in terms of so you get the diversity? In terms of, did you get what you want? Will we do it within the structure over there? Is that satisfying you?
Well, if it would certainly be something that I would like to talk with OECDD about and see if that is within the purview of the purpose and the intent of 622.
Okay. I mean, so you're amenable to that? We'll bring it back on Thursday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That works for me.
Okay.
Okay. Let's close the work session on 765 and schedule it up for Thursday.
Now what? I guess my aide wasn't listening.
Let's open up the work session on House Bill 2488.
House Bill 2488.
Mark, you want to explain what we're looking at?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2488 is the bill that allows OECDD to establish as many six electronic commerce zones. We are we would be replacing the bill if amendments were adopted. We're looking at the dash 7 amendments.
Okay, I believe just tag on the end.
Oh, I'm sorry.
2488, I'm only got
I'm sorry, yes, it is not a gotten stuff.
Mr. Ricks.
Dash 2?
Dash 7.
7?
Dash
2s.
Dash 2s.
Okay, I'm sorry, the dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Riggs. Today representing the three groups, the State Association of Electrical Workers, the Oregon Building Construction Trades Council, as well as the National Electrical Contractors. I won't go through this in significant detail because I know that the general issue has been discussed at length this session, both in this committee and other committees. But the idea here is that as we are facing a power shortage and a power crisis, we want to provide some incentives to encourage power plants to be built, but we also want to make sure that those plants are built in a responsible manner. We had significant discussion of this issue in another committee approximately 2 months ago. We had amendments offered, a minority report filed, and what we've done, and the long and short of it, is that bill does not appear to be moving. So in discussing this issue with the chairman, other members of the committee, what we did is we went back to the drawing board. We tried to take into consideration the various comments that various people had made about how you craft a solution to the idea of a company being responsible and assisting the community. So let me make a couple quick points. Essentially what we're doing here in the amendment is we're authorizing creation of energy enterprise zones, which is something that was not in the underlying bill. So we're allowing for that to be offered. We are then making a significant change from the earlier amendment that we had, and that we are changing the onus for making a decision on who's a responsible bidder and what those criteria are from the Construction Contractors Board, which is what we had in the earlier amendment. And in this case, what you have before you would ask that those decisions be made by the local community. In the enterprise zone system, there is a zone sponsor. In most cases, that's a city or a county. What this amendment would do is it would direct the city or the county or the zone sponsor to negotiate with the company that wants to build the plant and see if there's some sort of an agreement that can be arrived on kind of these responsible bidder guidelines. The second major change is that instead of having a system where we told the CCB, these are the things that we think that you should have in it, we have toned down the language a bit, and I would reference, if I could, page 9, lines 16 through 23 are really the operative language in this section. And what we're doing in lines 16, 17, 18, and 19 is asking that the zone sponsor enter into negotiations with the firm in question and reach an agreement with them on what sort of responsible bidder guidelines they would like to have for their particular enterprise zone. The most important sentence is the sentence on lines 21, 22, and 23, and that is starting with the words, the agreement. The agreement must state the extent to which the firm, in constructing, adding, modifying, or installing energy facilities must, and then it lists a series of provisions. Now, I point that out because there were significant charges made earlier in the process that we were mandating certain things. You were mandating that this provision or that provision had to be included. In actuality, what we're saying to the local community is the ball is in your court. Here is an opportunity for you. Here is a tool for you to use and some guidelines. Now, the extent to which they might enforce, say, prevailing wage, which is one of the issues here, might be 100%, or it might be 0%, or it might only be on certain aspects of the project. As you probably know, prevailing wage being a good example, the way Jack Roberts has it set up, there are 14 different divisions in Oregon, areas in Oregon. Prevailing wage in many areas where these plants are going to be built are not union wages. But be that as it may, we've backed off a significant amount, and we're not requiring prevailing wage in any way, shape, or form. We are providing a series of guidelines that a local community could use in entering into an agreement to determine whether or not the company should act in a responsible manner as they so define. I'll make one further point, which is that after this received significant play in one of the other committees, we started hearing from communities around the state. We heard from cities, we heard from counties, and we heard in particular from Umatilla County, which is going through a process as we speak with a plant that's being built out there. And obviously we're in the process. We've not gotten to the end of that process about the relationship that the county and the business will have. But I think it's fair to say on behalf of the county that the county felt that having had some guidelines up front would have been helpful. And I would also finally direct the committee's attention to the last section of this, which is section 32. One of the things that we had heard from our local communities and partners is that once an enterprise zone is granted, it's very difficult to sunset. So if they have an agreement with the company does not live up to that agreement, it's difficult for the local community to go back and say they have violated the provisions of this agreement and therefore the enterprise zone ought to be repealed. We do not give the counties or the cities or the zone sponsor an automatic decision-making authority to terminate the zone, but we do set up an expedited process by which the Economic Development Department must make a decision on a request for termination filed by a city or a county.
Representative Patridge?
Can I just go back? I have a couple questions, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
First, Doug, Section 31, what you're saying is, I mean, your header statement is that they're going to have to enter into an agreement. And all they have to do is state within the context of that agreement A through I and how this agreement fits within that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, yes, that is correct. Now, my expectation
is... So it could be meets the standard of responsibility specified in ORS 279-029, which I don't... Representative Lowe stole my ORS,
right.
So I don't remember what that is.
Award of contract bond, waiver of bond in case of emergency.
And you could say it doesn't meet that requirement. It doesn't meet any of these requirements, but they could still put forth the agreement.
They could say that the extent to which the agreement should cover these areas might be zero.
Okay. And A through I, where does the prevailing wage piece fit in there? Where do they have to state in their agreement whether they comply with
prevailing wage is down towards the bottom, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. That is G. And again, the local sponsor, zone sponsor, in negotiations with the business, and these are, you know, bipartisan negotiations between the two parties, they would jointly determine whether or not G would apply in whole or in part or not at all to the project in question.
Okay, so if the answer was it didn't comply in any part to ORS 279.359 prevailing wage, this agreement could still go forward. It would just simply be stated within the context of the agreement that no, there's no prevailing wage requirement as a result of this contract, but it could still go forward.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick, absolutely. That is certainly the intent, and I think that was the intent that was captured relatively well by legislative counsel.
Okay, then on to Section 32. Then my question would be, say a firm or the city or county didn't want this to go into effect, so so Section 32 provides a mechanism whereby they appeal, basically, to the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. Am I following correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, that's partly correct. The intent of Section 32 is to allow a community that has previously requested an enterprise zone designation to be able to come back at a later point in time and say, we believe that the company is not living up to the agreement which we signed with them, therefore we would like that agreement and the zone terminated. And so it's the first step would be you'd have to have an agreement. They would submit it to OECDD. That zone would be approved. At some later point, the community would have an opportunity to come back in and say, we're very concerned. We do not think that Section 4 or Section 5 of our agreement is being lived up to. Therefore, we'd like to request that OECDD make the consideration to terminate the zone. So it would be after the zone has been granted, that community, which was the zone sponsor, could come back on an expedited basis and ask for reconsideration of the provisions of that zone. So it's a tool in the toolbox of the zone sponsor. I view it as an enforcement mechanism.
What kind of expertise does Oregon Economic and Community Development have to terminate? As a lawyer, I'm having trouble making that linkage, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, there are provisions in existing statute, and I'd have to take a look at them again, that do allow for sunset of an enterprise zone under certain circumstances. I would have to go back. It's been 2 months since I looked at the statute. But
can I ask OEDD
to
come forward, Mr. Chair, and answer the question about how is this a normal course of? I mean, I dealt with these maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but I haven't dealt with them either. So,
Mr. Chair, members of this committee, Doris Penwell from Economic and Community Development. Let me just say, in this case, we're talking about a firm that creates sort of a pocket enterprise zone, so we're only dealing with one firm. In the regular enterprise zone program, you set up the zone, and then any businesses that can meet the zone terms
right.
can automatically have that benefit. So we from time to time have complaints about certain businesses, and they are investigated by our staff, the Attorney General's office, and other appropriate entities to determine whether they have violated or don't meet the terms of the agreement that's in place. The one question that I would have, I guess, is I don't understand the 30-mile issue. Why would some entity like Woodburn be able to complain about the City of Salem's enterprise zone? I'm not sure I understand that part in this issue, especially when it has to do with one company. That doesn't really answer your question, but it adds another question.
Maybe Mr. Riggs can answer. Doug, can you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, the 30-mile limit was an effort to make sure that we didn't allow someone who was a significant ways away to complain about the provisions being violated. But we wanted to make sure that there's a zone of influence or a sphere of influence here where workers will be coming from a certain distance to be employed. If members of a certain community living within that distance feel that the provisions of the zone agreement in the first place have been violated, we wanted to have some mechanism for their elected representatives to be able to file a request. That does not necessarily mean that the department must approve the request, but it's one possible tool or one avenue for a locally elected government. In most cases, it would be the zone sponsor. In some cases, it might not be the zone sponsor, but one would expect that in most cases it would be. So, again, it's just one more tool. I'm not wedded to the 30-mile limit. I'm not wedded to any particular limit. It was something that Ledge Council, I think, had actually suggested a specific mile limit, and we agreed with them on this particular provision.
Chair, I'd like to take a recess.
Okay. Without objection, we'll stand in recess for 5 minutes.
Thank you.